to 44321. And what else is there?
You can send us a check in the mail.
Oh, yes. We would love a check in the mail.
We're getting bills in the mail. You know what it's like when you get some money in the mail.
20 Do that Southeast for us. Ave, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Again, 20 Southeast Ave. Sorry, 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland, Oregon, 97214. It's been great. It's been fantastic. We'll see y'all next week.
I've been Althea.
I'm Tammy. Bye.
Bye.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934, and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, May 20th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
The flowers are blooming, the birds are singing, and KBOO's Spring Membership Drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at bit.ly/KBOO or text KBOO to 44321 between now and May 25th and support Avant-Garde Airwaves.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from the League of Women Voters of Portland, providing nonpartisan election information at lwvpdx.org. The League of Women Voters has online voters' guides, videos, and podcasts to help voters understand the state and local candidates and measures that will be on the ballot this May. Nonpartisan voter information at lwvpdx.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:02 a.m. Next up is a veteran's voice.
In the streets of Gaza town, a girl with dreams are hard and bound. Footsteps echo on shattered ground. Laughter lost but not the sound. Eyes that witness shadows cast, a football field from memories past. Through the tears she finds her way. In the dark she still sees the day. In the clouds dreams take flight. Football games in the pale moonlight.
as a child, no more fear.
Days of sorrow, nights of dread. A little girl with a heart that bled. Yet in her eyes, a flickering maze. A spirit enduring. A symphony in the battlegrounds.
In the clouds creeps thick flight. Football games in the pale moonlight. Reunited with friends so dear. Gaza child. Beneath the veil of the troubled sky, her spirit soars a lullaby. On the other side of the night, she finds peace, a guiding light. In the clouds, dreams take flight. Football games in the pale moonlight. Reunited with friends so dear. Gaza's child no more fear. In the clouds, children football matches far away. Reunited with friends so dear. Gaza's child no more fear.
Okay. Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veteran Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, 91.9 FM in Hood River, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. I'm Marvin, and Ty is our engineer today, and we're going to have a guest that's going to be talking with us in just a minute, and I'll tell you how I met her. I want to say hello to Gary and Darla in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I want to say hello to Kathy, my good friend in Aloha, and I want to say hello to Mitty and her grandchildren. Our guest is Sage, and I met Sage up at Portland State during the occupation of the library. And what was the first day you went to Portland State for the rallies and stuff?
Oh gosh. I think I started going a little bit after October 7th, just as much as I could go, but mm-hmm. Yeah, since this has been more mainstream, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you, so you went to the marches that started down at Pioneer Courthouse Square, those marches?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to every one of
those. Yeah, there were a few of those, and then when we had, like, the memorials and things like that.
Yeah. How'd you hear about them?
Instagram, social media, a couple of apps with, like, encrypted messaging to kind of... Yeah.
I don't know about that. Yeah. As you know, I can't even do what you showed me on my computer. Had you ever been to any other rallies and stuff before this?
Oh, yeah. So I grew up in Yakima, and in 2020, during like the BLM movement and everything that was happening there. We had a lot of things going on in Selah, Washington. And so that's kind of where a lot of my activism started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did anybody else in your family an activist?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you grow up in a religious family?
Not particularly. My mom was spiritual, but they are a very right-wing family. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
See, I was lucky. My family was definitely left. So I didn't have any problems doing that. And my brother, he had, before he moved down to Yahats, him and I would go to all the rallies, you know, for George Floyd and all of those. You probably didn't live here when we did the rallies for George Floyd.
No, I didn't.
Boy, they were something.
I believe it, especially Portland.
The federal building. Man. You know, everything was kind of cool until the feds came. And then, you know, it just went crazy. They made it go crazy, not us. There was no violence until they came.
Shocking how that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, surprising, isn't it, how that happens. But, yeah, the city's known for it, you know. And I don't know if I talked to you. We met this last Monday, and we talked for 2.5 hours. It was kind of fun. And but this city, back right after World War One, the bonus marches started here in Portland. Have you ever heard about the bonus marches?
No.
That's something else.
I know. I'm learning so much from you.
The bonus marches was guys at World War One, who came back and they were promised bonuses after a certain amount of time. But then the Depression hit and they needed that money. So the bonus marches started right here in Portland, ended up going all the way back to D.C. And, of course, the encampments got raided by the federal government.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, people had their wives and children there, but the federal government came and just wiped the camps out. I don't know if anybody got killed. I think they did. But, yeah, started right here in Portland. Portland's good. Yeah. We're going to talk today about a lot of different things, and the one thing, you know, Gaza, of course, we're going to talk about that, but also I want to talk a little bit about Sudan and a little bit on Myanmar, but I want you to read this little section right there for me, okay?
Yeah. So, genocide is the deliberate and systemic destruction of a group of people because of their ethnicity, nationality, religion, or race.
And that's exactly what's happened in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching and listening. I don't know, Sage. I have a lot of trouble listening to the news, but you have to, you know, sometimes because, you know, things are so horrible. You know, have you been listening? The U.S. government is going to send, I can't remember how many billions of dollars. Have you heard that, the newest thing? Do you remember how much it is?
The last I heard was a $26 billion package to not only Israel, but also Ukraine, other places. It was kind of like a joint $26 billion package for overseas.
Yeah. I saw that too. And I want you, this government is playing both sides of the card here, Sage, both sides of the card, you know. They're giving all this armament to Israel, and they're killing the people of Palestine. 35,000 have died.
And that's just an estimate.
Yeah.
Because all of the hospitals are gone,
yeah.
So they can't.
And how many people that are buried, there's a ton of them that are buried. under the mess.
I think the last I saw was potentially 200,000 people once the numbers are all, you know, there's been 100,000 bombs that have been dropped, so there's no way it's only 35,000.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A long time ago, we did a show about civilian deaths during a war. And back then, I think the United Nations came out with it, and it was something like 70% of all deaths in a war are civilian deaths. And but that's changed. You know, it's changed a lot with, especially if you look at Gaza, it's such a small place. I mean, really, if you look at it, it's not very big. And they dropped that, all that tonnage of mm-hmm. bombs in there. If that's not terrorism, I don't know what is. You know, genocide. I showed you. You want to read that? Just the dark spot?
Yeah. So in the United Nations meeting, they talk about civilian casualties, saying that 90% of wartime casualties are civilians. And the speakers are pressing Security Council to fulfill responsibility and protect innocent people in conflicts.
Yeah. Yeah. So here the U.S. is dropping food from the sky. Did you hear this morning that they talked, I think it was on Democracy Now, they talked to some Palestinians, and it was so interesting, you know, they were saying that these big pallets that they drop are landing on homes. They're landing on people,
mm-hmm.
and the best way, they were saying, is to come through the gates or whatever they call them. What do they call it? Do you remember what they're called?
The checkpoints?
Yeah, the checkpoints. To come through the checkpoints, that's the fastest way to do it, to get the food to the people. And now the U.S., with this vast knowledge of nothing, have built this dock. Have you heard about that?
I haven't, no.
They built this dock I don't know if it's close to Palestine now or not, but what they'll do, they'll put, you know, ships of food on it, and then they'll take it into Gaza. But the problem with that is Israel still has the right to go through those food packages and medicine and everything. You know, right now, I don't know if maybe you've heard that the hospitals and different places were running out of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that too?
Yeah, I remember hearing about that a few months ago. Yeah.
I know. The hospitals run out of fuel and medicine. You know, they hardly have any medicine. I remember, Sage, one of the things, pictures I saw of Israel, from Palestine, from the bombing of the people of Palestine. It's a war on the people, you know. They say it's a war on Hamas, but it's really a war on the people.
I mean, Netanyahu has come out and said that even if, like, they will do whatever it takes for Hamas to be defeated, even if it involves completely, devastating.
That's, you know, you can't kill a ideology, you know, Hamas. I wonder why. Oh, let's go back to the 90%.
For sure.
You're supposed to keep me on track here.
I'm trying.
She's supposed to keep me on track. But, you know, I was looking at just the 35,000 people that have died in Gaza, that 90% of that is 31,500 women and children.
Mm-hmm.
Women and children. That's just it's going to get higher, like you said. You know, it's going to get a lot higher, that the people with the continuing of the bombings and the starvation.
Yeah.
Northern Gaza right now is in a famine. You know, I saw pictures of little children that are just so skinny, you know, and have, you know, died from starvation, you know, no medicine at all. That, you know, kind of breaks your heart.
As it should.
As it should. I'll get back to the one of the pictures that really, really bothered me a lot was a picture of a little boy, and his clothes were ragged, and he had dust all over him. He had just been through a bombing. Mm-hmm. And he was standing, and he had his head on a wall, and it said he was all by himself, that his family had been killed. You know, he was just all by himself. And I would think back to Vietnam and all the little children that, you know, their parents were killed. And here are these little kids, you know, that, you know, the orphanages couldn't take all of them. And all these little kids were living in these camps that were outside of military bases. And they were being taken care of maybe, you know, by just a family that just took them in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what's going to happen with Gaza. I don't know how long it's going to take to rebuild Gaza.
I think it depends on how the world responds to Israel's actions, because there have been American investors who have spoken about real estate in Gaza. Yeah.
Real estate.
Yeah, one of the Kushners was saying that it would be great beachfront property.
In Gaza?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
huh.
Hopefully it is rebuilt for Palestinians.
Yeah. Not for investors.
Yeah.
Kircher, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, Jared Kushner, relation to Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
He's married to Ivanka.
Yeah. Ivanka.
Yeah.
The family that steals together, stays together, I guess.
Exactly.
Jeez, that's just horrible. Mm-hmm. Just horrible. I don't know where they're going to get all the money, you know, to, because have you seen pictures of Gaza? It's just like flattened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they bombed everything. They don't care. They bombed mosques, they bombed churches, they bombed hospitals, they bombed homes, they bombed everything. Schools.
Mm-hmm.
The schools are gone. The water supply, there's no water supply. There's no food supply. I mean, I heard, I don't know if it was on Democracy Now or not, but they were talking about Palestine like having no good water supply, but the illegal settlements right close to them, they're green. They got everything. And the people of Palestine have hardly anything.
It is an apartheid.
It is apartheid. I mean, there's no way around it. It is apartheid. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons that the South Africans have taken Israel to the International Court of Justice.
Yes.
And, you know, and a lot of other, I think Turkey has stopped dealing with with Israel.
They have, yeah.
And I think of the G7, you know, all the big G7 governments have all signed a letter about ceasefire in Gaza and everything. But, you know, there's one country that didn't sign it.
I wonder who that could have been.
Estados Unidos. USA didn't sign it. You know? You look... This is so frustrating to me. So frustrating to me. I look and I... I want to have you read just this part.
Okay.
Ha ha. I got a reader.
Israeli settlers attack aid convoy of 98 trucks heading to Gaza from Jordan.
Yeah. I saw pictures, not just of the aid trucks trying to get into Gaza, that they actually get on these trucks, kick the food, the medicine, everything off of the trucks, bust them up, bust them open, and it's just all these people in Gaza need that food and medicine and everything. These settlers, they don't care. They really don't care. I read about Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank since October 7th. It is a lot. Do you remember how many?
Last I saw, I remember it was somewhere around 700.
Wow.
But there was a fire there just recently, a few days ago, has just been going through the West Bank.
A fire?
Mm-hmm.
Just going through
the villages and
in the West Bank.
Yeah.
Oh man. The military, the IDF forces, Israeli Defense Forces, they don't stop these guys. They just let them run wild.
Why would they?
Yeah, why would they? Because they want the same thing. They want all of that land.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really do. They want all of that land. And not giving the Palestinians the food that they need and just standing watching them do that. I watched this. Didn't it say that they burned some of the trucks?
This one says that they attacked the aid convoy, but I did see the World Food Bank had vans that were carrying them that got attacked.
Yeah.
Two people survived, ran to the next car, that got bombed. Someone ran out, and then they also got killed. And it was obviously World Food Bank workers, and they've since pulled out, which is just yet one less avenue.
Yeah.
For Palestinians too.
Yeah, I think I heard that they burned some of the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So the Zionist settlers burned these trucks that were coming through. I think that coming through Jordan, I think they have to go through the West Bank. Do you know if that's true? Do they have to go through the West Bank?
That would be my guess, since the Egyptian border is
Israel wants to drive all of them out. They want to drive all the people out. I think that Israel's population is 9.5 million people, I think, but Palestine is 5 million, I think. But fighting Israel, that has every weapon in the world, including nuclear, which they do have. And they're trying. You see a picture of a little kid throwing a rock at a tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know? How many of those little kids have been driven over, crushed by these tanks? How many of those kids have been beaten to death by the IDF? You were going to say something, but I got in your way.
Oh, no, it's okay.
I think I read, I wished I would have brought that, that they found a mass grave with women and children. A mass grave with women and children. Just slaughtered. That's like I was telling you about My Lai.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they killed all those 502 women and children and old men in My Lai, Vietnam, you know, had them in a ditch and killed them. So the same thing's going on in Israel, I mean in Palestine right now, that the Israeli Defense Forces are just slaughtering children. They don't think of them as people.
No.
They don't. They don't think that the Palestinians are people. They're in a jail. I mean, they're in an open air jail. And the Palestinians, I don't know. Do you know who Abby Martin is?
No, I don't.
Abby Martin has Empire something. It's a really good show on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But she did interviews with Israelis in, I believe it was in Tel Aviv, and they were saying that they should kill all the Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
They should kill all of them. And that's just everyday people. Ty, you want to go ahead and play that second song? Okay, thanks, buddy. We're going to play a second song for us. And while he's getting that ready, it was a young kid, too, that was saying that they should just kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go.
Fed with Israel's lies, while they sit on a hillside, below them children die. They laugh and joke and party as the bombs light up the skies. They tell us that it's war, it's really genocide. While the people of Tel Aviv sleep safely in their beds, people of Palestine, they're counting their dead. They stand there with the slingshots and they face Israeli tanks, while the drones that fly above them built and govern sunny banks. With the people of the Gaza Strip, well, we'll stand hand in hand, and a tooth will never have a voice till we make a stand. While the people in Washington sleep safely in their beds, the people of Palestine, they're mourning their dead. The statesmen, now it's time to earn your pay. It's time for you to stand up and listen to what we say. It's time to stop the massacre, we'll not stand idly by. Viva Palestina, the battle cry. While the people in London sleep safely in their beds, the people of Palestine, they're burying their dead, burying their dead, burying their dead.
Thanks, Ty, for playing that, buddy. While the music was playing, Sage and I were talking, and there's going to be a rally. Is it a rally? Here, I'll let her talk
okay.
about it.
So in Portland tomorrow from 11 to 2 at the East Federal Building will be the Nakba 76 Resistance Until Return. it's basically an honor, you know, honoring the past, acknowledging the present, working towards the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's tomorrow from 11 to 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be there. You'll probably be. Do you have to work?
Yes.
Oh, she's got to work.
Yep. No weekends for me.
She's got to work. Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay. You know, Sage, one thing that both of us went into the library at Portland State. Both of us went. And I saw a lot of writing on the walls that were really good stuff. I mean, really, really good stuff. And but the one thing, I don't think I saw one thing about Aaron Bushnell. Did you see anything on the walls?
I actually think that there was one that was in his honor.
There was one thing on the walls?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what it said?
I might be able.
She's going through her pictures. It couldn't take pictures.
I personally did not take pictures, but someone on the internet has pictures.
Yeah, because I remember when I was going to go through, I went through twice. I went through once by myself, and then a couple hours later, I went through with Mike Hasty, who's been on the show before, and he's a real good friend of mine, Vietnam vet, and we went through together, and he wanted to take pictures so bad, you know, because he's a photographer and he wanted to take pictures so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually said no pictures. But, you know, the news media had been in there and they took pictures.
Mm-hmm. Especially afterward, I know.
Yeah.
No books were harmed and we love that.
Yeah, no books were harmed. But there's still, Portland State is still friends with Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
Who makes a lot of weapons and stuff like that. But I didn't see that thing of Aaron Bushnell.
Yeah, I couldn't find any.
Yeah.
Document.
It's pretty interesting. You know, he was a young. Do you want to read this or you want me to?
It's up to you. I don't mind.
And okay. I'll see. See, it was this is a letter to Aaron Bushnell, 1998 to 2024 by Kevin Bassel. And
I'm going to try to keep my composure.
Okay.
Okay.
This is really tough.
I write this letter from the other side, from the world of the living, where the situation, as you so painfully know, is dire. It's been a week since you set aflame to your body outside the Israeli embassy in protest of the genocide in Gaza. Your words clear like the sky, your voice steady. This is what the ruling class has decided will be normal. I didn't get much sleep in the days after. I watched your video. I held your message till the end. Your uniform fell from your body in fiery tatters as you clenched your fists and stood fast. Free Palestine. I carry the image as a branding on my heart. It stings, as it should. The Pentagon gave a statement, expressed condolences to your family, said their support for Israel remains ironclad. Your story stayed in the news cycle for longer than I expected, but mainstream outlets watered down your intention. Your statement circulated to the farthest reaches of social media. Veterans in Portland, Oregon burned their uniforms in a barrel. Vigils and protests, art and poetry, debates and op-eds, still no ceasefire. This is what the ruling class has decided will be normal. I don't want any more service members to do what you did, Aaron, but I respect and honor your sacrifice. Rest easy, Airman. You gave your life for a question. What are you going to do with your one shining and glorious existence to keep our world of the living from becoming a land of the dead?
Yeah. He was an airman, and he wore his uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the video when it first went on the internet, and it was from the very first when he started talking. When he put the accelerant on his body and he lit it, but they took it off after that, you know. I just stared at that and just thought, this wonderful man couldn't take it anymore. He just couldn't take it, and he did the ultimate sacrifice for the people of Palestine. I think in Palestine, I think they named a street or something after him.
Wow. You
didn't hear that?
I didn't, but that's incredible.
Yeah, that they named a street after him. And to do that, his heart was hurt. You know, his heart was bleeding for the people of Palestine. But I read a story that someone before Aaron did the same thing. And this, I think it was in Texas at the Israeli consulate. But they never said who did it. They never said the person's name. They never said if it was a man or a woman, and it wasn't on the news. You know, I just saw a blurb, a real fast blurb that happened. But the only thing that they showed was I think it was a security guard had got burned a little bit trying to, but that's what they showed. They showed the security guard being put on a gurney and put into the back of an ambulance, but they never showed. They never said a statement if the person did a statement. And you said you'd heard somebody else did it in another part of the world, though.
Yeah, someone talking about the genocide that is also happening in the Congo.
Yes.
So. Mm-hmm.
And that's where they burn themselves.
Mm-hmm.
See, the Congo is so rich in natural resources, but the people aren't getting any of it. You know? It's just like colonialism, imperialism all over again. When these people was talking about the dock that the U.S. made to deliver food, the one person said that they didn't trust it, and they thought that maybe that the Americans made it so they could get the oil, our natural gas that's off the coast of Palestine, that's why they made it, so they can do that. They could take it away from the people in Palestine, you know.
It makes sense why people don't trust our government.
Gee, I don't know. Sage, I don't know why that's so
true.
I wonder why they don't trust this government. Like when Aaron Bushnell, the Pentagon said that their support of Israel is ironclad. Ironclad.
Yeah.
Oh, man. another thing that, you know, a lot of people in the government have just couldn't take it anymore, and they just quit.
Mm-hmm.
They just quit. I read a story about Army Major resigns commission over U.S. support of Israel in Gaza.
Is that Harrison Mann?
Huh?
Harrison Mann?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know about that?
Of course.
Yeah, of course you do. I didn't until I saw this. But, you know, he makes a lot of good statements about why he quit.
Mm-hmm.
Why he can't do it anymore. I remember in Vietnam, well, this is after I came back, there was a lot of officers, young officers, guys and women that had gone through ROTC, mm-hmm. you know, in college, that just resigned their commissions. They were not going to go to Vietnam. They just didn't, you know, believe in the war anymore. You know, I don't think they probably ever did. They just needed money to go to college.
Yeah. So,
and they just resigned their commissions. There were so many deserters from the Vietnam War. You know, guys were saying, "Nah, we're not going to do this. We're leaving. We're not going to do it." I remember when I was getting ready to go to Vietnam, they sent me down. I think it was Oakland Army Depot. I don't know why they didn't send me up to Seattle. I mean, up to Seattle, Fort Lewis. But I went down to Oakland, California. And I was sitting there waiting. You know, you wait in the Army, you wait. There was a guy I started talking to, and he said, "I'm going home." And so that night, he said, "You want to come with me?" And I said, "No, I don't think I can." And he said, "Well, I'm leaving." And he just walked out. Went home. He said that was it. I'm not going to do it.
Did anything happen?
I don't know. I never heard. It was just, strange thing that happened.
Yeah.
With this kid. I'm sure it happened a lot. But a lot of guys in Vietnam that decided that they were done. They weren't going to do it in Vietnam, you know. And some of them went to Sweden. Some of them went to France. I don't know how they got there, but, I don't know how they got there, but they did. They just left. They were going to do. There was this Marine guy I knew. I can't think of his name, but he's from Oregon. He was a Marine. His father was a colonel. And his father was serving in Vietnam at the same time he was.
Wow.
Yeah, at the same time that he was serving. And he was up in the Da Nang area, in central Vietnam. He's up in the Da Nang area. And he told me, he says, "I had enough." He says, I can't take it anymore. And so when they've stood down, when he got resupplied and everything, he left. And he said he went to, he'd just catch rides on Army trucks and everything, and he just went all the way down to Saigon and just said, "That was it. I'm not going to go anymore." And his father found out that he had left, and I think he found his dad, and his dad talked to him, and his dad said, "You need to go back. You need to go back." And so he went back, and he was worried because he had gone to some kind of a court-martial, and he was worried about it being in his records, his military records, because he was applying for disability.
Oh.
And he didn't get a dishonorable discharge, which is really interesting. That's a colonel. And so he was worried that they'd find it. And he had a friend that was working at downtown at the VA building downtown. And he said his friend got a hold of his records because he was applying for disability. And he said his friend went all the way through it and couldn't find anything.
Wow. Gotcha.
And he couldn't find anything. So he wasn't, he was happy about that. But it happened a lot. You know, we talked about my buddy Bob Chenoweth. Remember, he was a POW mm-hmm. for 5 years. And 5.5 years. And he was talking about a soldier that had gone over to the Viet Cong, and that guy was working as a guard at the jungle prison camps. And he said the guy would come in and talk to him and told him that his job was to go near American military bases and try to talk guys to stop fighting. And that was his job in there. He carried a rifle. He dressed just like the Viet Cong. He spoke fluent Vietnamese. And that was his job. His job was to get Americans to stop fighting.
That's.
And in 1973, when POWs came back, he didn't come back with them. He didn't come back. I think it was like 15, maybe 20 years after that, he finally did come back. And he was court-martialed, and they took away any benefits he had. They took away any money they had coming to him. But they did. I don't think they put him in prison.
Just because he didn't come back?
Because he deserted and went over to the Viet Cong. Yeah.
Wow.
And he didn't. I was really surprised that he didn't get a court. I'm pretty sure he didn't get court-martialed, but he just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
He couldn't do it anymore. There was another guy, a black guy. This guy was a white guy. But the black guy had married a Vietnam. I think it was a Vietnamese or Cambodian. Cambodian. And he deserted, and he went over to the other side, too. And he, but he didn't do, I think he may have done a little bit, but he was just with his family. And I wish I had to remember his name, too. I don't remember. But he was killed. They killed him after a while. Wow. They killed him. But I found a book in Vietnam, and I was going through these books, and it was a book about him that had pictures of him being with the Cambodian, whatever they were, and it was a picture of him with his family sitting on a stool on the ground having a lunch. And I bought that book, and I brought it home, and about 10 or 15 years later, you know, this was when after the war, I got an email from a writer in New York City who wanted to borrow my book. And I said, how do you know I have that book? He says, because the American Embassy in Thailand told him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Isn't that weird? Somebody snitched on me. Right. There's no doubt about it. Somebody snitched on me. And so I said, sure, you can borrow it, because he was going to do a in fact, he did a documentary. He wrote a book, and he also did a documentary. He wanted me to go to Vietnam with him and Cambodia, but I just didn't want to do it. So I sent him my book, and he used it. He had it for about a month or so. And he did send it back, which is good, because I have it somewhere. And I have like 500 books on the Vietnam War. And I have some that were written by the Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one wonderful magazine that I found in Hanoi. And it was, I can read Vietnamese, but not really well. My late wife could really do well. But it was a it was talking about Che Guevara.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. We were talking about Che Guevara. And it was a great book. I have it at home as a great book. And a magazine. It was a really good magazine. One time, it was me and I think Don Blackburn, the guy I gave you the book. I think it was him and I. We'd been down in Saigon. We flew back up to Hanoi. And the plane landed, but it didn't go to the gate to let us off. I thought, oh, man, what's going on? And as we were taxiing in and we stopped, there was a Cuban airplane that had landed. That Cuban airplane was there, and it was Fidel Castro had gone to Hanoi.
Wow.
Yeah, and they wouldn't let us off the plane until he had got off his plane and did whatever he was going to do.
Wow.
Because Cuba really supported North Vietnam during the war. So did the Russians.
Hmm.
They really supported supported the North fighting against Americans. Because Cubans know, because the embargo we've had since what? The 60s, 50s, mm-hmm. 60s against the people of Cuba. So, another little story. We're getting off on these rants. We're about out of time. Laurel was helping this acting company, Nahat Kik Vietnam, the National Acting Company in Vietnam. And one of the actresses was really nice, and she spoke really good English. And we were at her restaurant. She had opened a restaurant. And this was when, the U.S. was bombing somebody. We're always bombing somebody. And she had this big TV, and all the Vietnamese were around it looking at it. And they just was shaking their heads because they'd been through it. Mm-hmm. The Americans bombing them. And so after that, we had lunch and we walked out. And this white guy walked up to this actress and was talking to him in Russian. Because she spoke English and Russian.
Wow.
And after they'd finished talking, she came back over where Laurel and I were standing, and she says, he was a reporter from Moscow during the American War on Vietnam. And they were friends, that he had been there the whole time through the bombings and everything. And he had come to see her, and he was just there on a vacation.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could have met him more and talked to him, because she said he did speak some English, and it would have been so interesting just to see what he was like. Mm-hmm. I mean, during the war, because I had met some reporters that had gone south and was down in the south during the war, and I had talked to some of them, and it was just really interesting what their whole. What they were able to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was also a Australian news reporter, and he, I can't remember his name either, but the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese took him all through the South. And he did all these great stories on what was going on. And boy, the Americans hated him.
I'm sure.
They really hated that guy. But he's passed away. But he had some really good, really good articles and things that he had written. A lot of the actors from the acting company had gone south to entertain their troops. You know, just like we did. Well, looks like we're... Ty, looks like we're out of time. We'll be... See, I can't do that yet. We'll be back on June 21st at 9 a.m. Thank you, Sage. It's been wonderful. I'm sure we're going to do it again. We'll be back June 21st at 9 a.m., and there it is. Thanks, everybody.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9:58 a.m.
In the streets of Gaza town, a girl with dreams are hard and bound. Footsteps echo on shattered ground. Laughter lost but not the sound. Eyes that witness shadows cast. A football field from memories past. Through the tears she finds her way.
In the dark she still sees the day. In the clouds dreams take flight. Football games in the pale moonlight. Reunited with friends so dear. Gaza child no more fear.
Days of sorrow, nights of dread. A symphony in the battlegrounds.
In the clouds, dreams take flight. Football games in the pale moonlight. Reunited with friends so dear. Gaza child. Beneath the veils of troubled sky, her spirit flows.
You're listening to Community Radio, KBOO, Portland.